Good morning, good morning, good morning. What a beautiful day, I think, in the month of May.
Oh, it is a beautiful day out there, that's for sure. I should be out on a boat, not sitting here.
Well, I think you're on the way, aren't you? Or no, you're not booked today.
No, not booked today. You had today off.
Well, this is Fishing Frank, Cap Kale in the chair across from me. And our studio audience is out there, and they're just all revved up, ready to go today. Everybody's just really excited. It is one heck of a day.
It is. Yeah, no wind so far. Cool. Yeah, driving over that bridge, that water was like a sheet of glass.
About 2 days ago, I got really jonesing for it. Today, I don't know, maybe, I'm just a little laid back. Tired. Finally got rid of the Black Beast. I think Dave is the guy, the salesman's name. I got to look up his card. I'm going to post it up. He actually pulled off a miracle to sell me a truck when I didn't want a truck. Boy, that's
a
salesman.
Yeah, you looked at the first truck they brought for about a whopping 6 seconds and walked away from it.
Yeah, I think this was the sixth one. But, boy, he pulled up that Toyota, and I was like, oh, that's pretty truck.
Very nice truck.
It was pretty truck.
Very nice truck. And
new to me, not new.
Well, I think the next vehicle that I get, the next truck, is definitely going to be a foreign truck. I've had
But that's Japanese what you had before.
Trucks. Yeah, I had a Nissan. I had Japanese trucks. I've had American trucks, and I like the Japanese trucks better because they actually put a little forethought and common sense into their vehicles.
Well, I can tell you, I bought it without really going around. I bought it because of the motor, and it didn't have hardly any miles on it and all that. But what was amazing to me was when I looked, there are cup holders everywhere.
Yeah, you'll never go thirsty in your truck.
Never. If you put a bottle of water in every cup holder there, I'm pretty good
for a month.
Yeah, a month. But I guess we ought to get to the fishing, and enough about that. A little sentimental over the Black Beast. I kind of missed the fact that when I hit the gas, the dashboard of that Dodge would just fall off, trying to come into my lap.
Yep.
It kept it interesting driving it.
There was always something new.
There was always something, falling off, falling down, the whole gauge thing and the stuff on the top. Zip stripped it all back up,
The dash. The rear view mirror sitting on the dash.
Yeah. The dashboard had crushed in at one point.
The seasonal ant farms.
Yeah, it was kind of neat watching them. I had most names for all the critters in there.
Yeah, but isn't that weird how it goes with vehicles? You actually feel bad about getting rid of a vehicle that you've had for a long period of time. And
I would actually,
if it's a boat, you're happy to see that thing go.
I would actually just say that I had one twinge just because that Dodge was the worst truck I've ever seen in my life. It was the most comfortable. It would be nice to say it was great to drive, but it had a steady pull to the right. So what was good about it is you couldn't fall asleep driving that truck because it would take you right to the ditch.
It was constant concentration.
If I could do long distance drives with it because if you took your, if you weren't thinking about what you were doing every second, you would be in the ditch. Yep. So, it did keep me awake. It was, and picking up pieces after, you go down a bumpy road was always fun. So, but anyway, fishing, and you're going to be putting one of the boats. We got to finish putting the bus back together today. Yep, you're going to finish putting that back together. And it's always something you're fixing and doing no matter what you are. As soon as you get around the water, everything seems to have these little things. But right now, it was great down at the 41 Bridge. I don't know how I segued back to that, but it was great down at 41. It slowed down a little bit.
And I think that has a lot to do with tides.
Really?
I've been finding that morning incoming tide has been the time to be out there. And everything
the bridge
slows
was
down.
Loaded with fishermen. There was cobia, sharks. They're catching.
Yeah.
They're still catching a lot of whiting.
Still catching cobia.
And just not the numbers they were. But it could be, we've taken the school.
Yeah, I mean, you're pulling. They're still pulling at least one a day.
Yeah.
Off that 41 bridge every morning. And it was 2 and 3 and 4 a day.
Right.
It doesn't take long to
dwindle
down the numbers.
Yeah, this school's down a little bit.
But there's still many many cobia still out there in the middle of the harbor. We've been catching at least one on every shark trip.
South of Marker 1 through all the 3 deep holes.
Yep.
Anything over by the reef right now in cobia?
I'm going to say yes because there is a ton of bait around that reef. If you go over it with your fish finder, you see those clouds of bait above the structure.
Yeah, it's weird. So much of the bait is still deep.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard of three or four different types of bait out there. Nothing where it should be, except the thread fins. Thread fins are supposed to be, yeah. But everything else is a little goofy.
Yeah, and they're coming. The butterfish have shown up finally. We did manage to get a leather jacket on the Sabiki rig yesterday. So
a lot of people talking about skipjacks, and yeah. Skipjack is a kind of like a slender pompano-looking fish. Yeah. It's thin, it's bright silver, has a bright yellow tail on it.
Yeah.
And when you grab it around the body of the fish like you normally would, it stings you with three little spines on the top and three little spines in the belly. And it's not as intense as a bee sting, but it will light you up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I won't say it puts your hand on fire. You'll feel it.
Oh, yeah.
You get a little stiff. You get a little warm.
Yeah.
You feel it.
And you definitely know you grabbed the fish that you shouldn't have grabbed that way.
Definitely.
If you're going to grab a skipjack with your bare hands, thumb on one side, fingers on the other, do not grab the top or the belly of the fish. Not the dorsal, not the belly and spines.
Definitely not.
Because it will light you up.
Yep.
That is always fun. I mean, when you get somebody on the boat for the first time, you go,
oh, yeah.
I'll get the bait. I'll take care of it. Yep. No, just let me get it. Oh, no, I'll help. Ow!
And that's what we were doing yesterday. The guys that we had fishing, they were running the sabiki rigs, and the guy comes up with one sabiki rig full of fish. I said, okay, now stop. You can touch that one. You can't touch this one. You can't touch this one. This one's full of spines that won't hurt you, but they're a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
And you can touch this one.
Yeah. it's funny how when people think, okay, it's bait, it's all good, but you get in those skipjacks. Now, if you're allergic to bee stings, I strongly, strongly recommend you have, I forget what they call that medicine for if you get stung by a bee and you're allergic to it, because it's about the same toxicity as a bee sting when you get nailed by a skipjack and some of these other fish. For those of you who are not allergic to bee stings, it's highly doubtful that you would have any reaction to it, other than you're going to scream, throw the fish down, and basically dance around cussing them for a little while.
Yep.
But, you know, it's just getting even. I mean, you know.
Well, every fish down here has its defense mechanism, and you have to be aware of that.
Funniest thing I ever saw with skipjacks was a, you know, those big industrial, like, quart cans of WD-40.
Yep.
I'm out, and I'm going along, and I'm seeing this thing. It's blue and yellow, and it's moving on the water. And I can see this whole thing of fish, whole school of bait fish, and they're just all splashing and going. And they're attacking this can. They keep hitting it. Bang, 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 bang. And the can's rolling in the water, and it's floating in the bait fish. And every once in a while, when I get closer, I can see that one of them would hit the spray nozzle. And it'd go, psh. And it'd shoot the WD-40 in the water. They'd all go crazy again. And it was a school of skipjacks. And I sat there and watched this school of skipjacks. I mean, laughing my head off for at least 5-10 minutes. It was just amazing to watch. And the old adage, does WD-40 attract fish?
Oh, absolutely.
I can guarantee it works.
Absolutely. I mean, it's made from fish oil, so...
Yeah,
why wouldn't it be? It's a can of chum.
Yeah, it really is. You know, and it was surprising. But watching those fish hit it and hit it and hit it, and every once in a while, one would hit that nozzle, and you just see it spray, and they would go nuts again.
Yeah.
And that always kind of clinched in my mind the old wives' tale, WD-40 is a fish attractor. And it's always been listed in, you know, the top 5, top 10, depending on the years.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that kind of skipjack WD-40 story, I don't know why that one popped out, but it did. And anyway, what would be the thing? Now, I'm hearing a lot of fish on Cape Hayes. A lot of tarpon between Pirate Harbor and about halfway north.
They've been working that bar up and down it, just inside the bar and on top of the bar during your high tides. Is just full of small mullet.
Really?
Not finger mullet, not adults. They're kind of that
we just call them
finger
mullet.
Perfect Tarpon size mullet, yeah. And they're in there after those guys.
Yeah, that. But the tarpon were heavy from Pirate Harbor down to Burnt Store, and now they seem to be a little further north.
Yeah, they're. I keep coming across them. I cross the bar if it's rough out there to go shark fishing, just above Pirate Harbor, and they're usually sitting in between Pirate Harbor and Two Tits is where they're sitting.
Yeah, that Cormorant Key.
Right where that nice clear water is coming in on the incoming tide.
About 5-6 feet of water outside the bar. Ton of tarpon. You're going to have to mix and match. And basically, it's an anchor upper drift situation. And you just want to throw a bunch of baits out free line. It's shallow. They're going to go down deep anyway.
Yeah.
But they'll kind of bounce along. You know, the current will pick them up, set them down a little bit if you don't have any weights on it.
And I kind of look at the tarpon. If I go by them, if they're side to side and tight with each other, I'm going to pass. Usually when I find them tight like that, they don't want to feed.
No,
if they've got 5 or 6 feet between them, they seem to be more apt to feed at that point.
Yeah, it's like stockade. Okay, when anything comes through us is going to get it.
Yeah.
But I think maybe that laid up close to each other. I don't know what all that's about, but it's must be a comfort thing. And
yeah, it's just one of those things that I've noticed out there that when they're tight together, they don't eat.
I think you're absolutely right, but you know, you got two choices. You can either then head out to the middle hole, the 20 foot, the middle hole, the Pirate Harbor hole, and try see if anything's rolling out there. See if you can pick up any of them. DOA Bait Buster's doing good. We're sold out of the Power Bait shads, but we've reordered them. They'll be here in a few days.
Those are working well this year. I take it.
It's unbelievable. I mean, we sold out. They'd sat on the shelf for about a year.
Yeah, they've been there a while.
And all of a sudden, everything's gone. It took a weekend to decimate our stock. And they turned on to it. Whatever that Power Bait thing is, they really seem to turn on to it.
So. God only knows.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But then again, I'm not sure much. You know, it's just been kind of in a fog here lately. You know, I don't... Yeah, I
can't... Just going with it.
Yeah, it just... Like, the motor's in neutral, or the brain's in neutral, the body's in second gear, and it just kind of functioning.
That's basically how I feel through the wintertime.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just...
It's the same fishing over and over.
Horrifically and over. Wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it's been good fishing, but it's always
the fishing is good. business has been great. Everything is terrific.
I think that's why I like the shark fishing. It doesn't matter what happened yesterday.
It's going to
take
be
whatever
day.
Happened yesterday and throw it away.
Right.
Because today can be so obviously different from yesterday that it's not funny with shark fishing.
Now, productive ways of doing shark right now is all about chum. I mean, getting the chum out there, getting the bait fish lit up, and the more the bait fish school around the boat, and try and avoid the urge to cast net, because cast netting kind of destroys the whole thing.
Yeah, it's not going to work anyways. You're cast netting in 15 feet of water. Even if you have a good quality net.
If you got a 12-foot 5/8, you'll do okay. Yeah, 12-foot half inch.
Most of the stuff you're getting chummed up are pinfish, and you're not getting them in a cast net. They have big eyes. They see very, very well.
And they're highly aggressive piranha species.
We couldn't even sabiki rig the pinfish that were in the chum slick because they could see the rod.
Really?
As soon as anything passes over that chum slick, boom, gone. Then they come back. If they see you step on the back deck, boom, gone.
Wow.
Now, if you go up to the front of the boat and drop that sabiki rig all the way down to the bottom, pinfish after pinfish after pinfish. But when they're in the chum slick, nope. They know they're vulnerable up there.
Okay. So, anchor the boat up, get your chum bag out.
Yep,
and when you start seeing all the boils of fish and everything, and then just go up to the front of the boat and drop your bait down.
Yeah,
or drop your
sabiki rig down. And the nice thing is we were getting a lot of big thread fins.
Right.
Which are great black tip bait.
Oh, yeah. Whack them in half, leave them whole, and then just...
I like putting them out whole and live. If you have a lot of shark in your chum slick, and they're actively eating one after another, put a slice down that thread fin side. People don't realize how bloody thread fin are.
Oh, yeah, they're
very, very bloody. But if the shark are slow, I like put a couple out on the bottom live, put one out on the on a big spinning reel on a bobber out on the surface. That's going to be your fun one. You're going to see him hit. You're going to see him jump with it. you're probably going to lose them because you can't get to that rod fast enough.
What's amazing to me is how acrobatic the sharks are.
They are.
We don't consider sharks to be, you know, the jumping, crazy, you know, not you don't think of them like you do a tarpon or a snook.
Right.
But they are. They're amazingly acrobatic.
Especially the black tips. That's why they're one of my favorite fish to catch. They're fast, they're powerful, they're acrobatic.
Hey, sorry, I've been trying to take some allergy medicine, trying to get this cough and everything cleared up.
But they will jump and dance for you. And
tail dance, like a son of a gun. It's tail hard to believe they can put their whole body out of the water, just have the flipper of their tail in, and just walk sideways for 15, 20, 30 feet. I mean, just right across the surface. Crazy as anything you've ever seen.
Yeah, that's why I tell people to be so very, very careful when they're dealing with those sharks at the side of the boat, because one flip of his tail and he's in your lap.
Yeah, you know, Terry was talking about this last night, and somebody's going to get bit, seriously bit.
Yes.
Not so much on a boat, but one of the beach guys. One of these beach guys.
I think the beach guys are okay.
Well, the problem is everybody's seen everybody jump in the water with the sharks.
Right.
And they're jumping in chest deep water with the sharks.
No. Now you're in his territory where he can move. If he's floating, you're a goner. Okay? If he's sitting on the sand, he's a little slower. He actually has to work at moving his body, and it's a lot safer. But if that shark is openly swimming and floating, you're now in his territory.
And they can reach around and pretty much touch their tail.
Quickly.
And the one thing that I think she's right about is it's going to happen. And if not this year, next year. It's just a matter of time before somebody gets seriously wounded or mortally wounded.
Yep.
And the only thing is... I'm just not looking forward to the backlash. It's just something people wanted to do. They are doing it, and you're going to do it, and there's risk in everything. Driving your car, Carl walked out of his house and saw a horrific accident right down the street. Somebody got T-boned right out of the car. They didn't stop at the stop sign, rolled through a stop sign, and got T-boned. But yet, nobody says we shouldn't drive. But as soon as somebody gets bit or hurt on
the
beach,
kill all the sharks.
They're going to say no more shark fishing, it's too dangerous.
It's
people,
that jaws mentality.
Well, I think it's just about everything. Somebody goes on a bicycle and they get a head injury, and now it's a law you have to wear a helmet.
Sure.
Somebody goes down a hill on a sled, they get hurt. Now you have to have a helmet when you do a sled.
Sure.
Even though 13 billion people did it without injury when that one person gets hurt. And I think that's what's going to happen with the shark fishing on the beach, is somebody's going to get bit.
Yeah, and seeing that, especially Boca Grande. I mean, Boca Grande is technically a state park now.
Right.
And it'll be too easy for them to just close that to shark fishing completely. So,
and it's a shame because so many people do it safely, and you know, Mal and Andrew, he's amazing with watching what happens with the sharks and trying to get, and thinks more about the shark than anything else. But
you have to,
seeing so many people just get nuts with the whole beach shark fishing thing, and they're not giving themselves time to learn what you should and shouldn't do.
And it's, unfortunately, it's not something that you can teach. A shark has a body language, just like a human, just like a dog, even a horse. It has its body language
that
you watch. I almost got tagged the other day. And
what happened?
We had a one rod out the front of the boat with a circle hook and mono on it.
Well, there was your mistake getting circle hook.
And I was trying to target cobia coming up through the harbor.
Right.
Trying to get it up as far above the chum slick as I possibly could to try and avoid the sharks.
Yeah, far as way as possible.
But you can't. And that's what happened. We had about a 3-foot black tip pick it up, and we got him to the boat. And trying to deal with that circle hook, and this is why I hate circle hooks for shark.
Yeah.
If you're fishing the beach, that's one thing. When you're fishing a boat, I don't think they have a place in shark fishing. That is nothing but a risk to the shark. It's nothing but a risk to the shark fisherman.
Yeah, if you're going to circle hooks out of a boat, you know, for sharks, you need to take a bolt cutter with you. That's all there is. Because unless you cut that hook in half, you're not getting it back.
Yeah, and that's what we were working on, getting that hook out. And...
Is this the one where you told me?
Yeah, A lot of people don't realize that a shark can throw its mouth forward a couple inches.
Yeah.
They can extend their mouth.
It actually, when they pull their jaws back and to actually get a bite of something, their lips come back because the jaw actually pushes forward.
Yeah.
And it can go 2 inches easy.
Yeah, you think that you're a couple inches away and you're safe, and you're not. And I saw...
kind of like the head coming out of the, chest of somebody, an alien, where, you got the monster, and this other head comes out and is snapping at you.
And that's about what it's like. And I saw just the faintest twitch of its eyelid. Because most sharks will close their eyelids when they thrust their mouth forward
to protect their eyes. Yeah, I think they have to.
And I saw that twitch, and when I saw that twitch, I started pulling my hand back, and he grabbed, and luckily he got nothing but glove.
So he actually got close enough to get your glove, but not your hand.
Thousands of an inch away from skin. And I just stopped and held it there, because I know there's no point in fighting. When a shark closes his mouth, you're not getting away. The black tip's teeth are angled backwards, so stuff can't get away.
Yep.
So I just, gently just held still and kept my hand on him, and my client starts flipping out. He got you! He got you! What do you need me to do? I just need you to settle down and go grab him my other pair of pliers so we can get his mouth open and I can get my gloves back. But yeah, it could have been ugly, and...
yeah, that would have been real ugly. 50-50 shot on losing the fingers with a shark that big, but definitely going to the hospital.
Yeah, it's going
to
make a mark.
You're definitely going to have to go get stitches and all that kind of stuff, and maybe have a finger sewed mostly back on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're going to get hurt. I mean, they're designed to rip chunks out of things. So.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking today, I think one of the reasons they don't attack people as much is because of our heavy bone structure. It's too hard to chew through bones on people.
That and we taste like crap.
Yeah, we are the worst food on the planet.
I mean, look at some of the things that you eat.
Oh, yeah. Well, me, I'm...
I wouldn't eat another human if I was the last animal on Earth.
Well, that's pretty much... nothing attacks us. We've evolved to be apex predator, and people always think, well, we should be vegetarians and all that. If we were vegetarians, our eyes would be on the side of our head.
Right.
They wouldn't be in
just
the front
like,
of our head.
Just like deer.
Right. Deer, they can see all around them. Their eyes are all on the side.
Right.
And because somebody's out to eat them. And that's us. Our eyes on the front of our head. We're a predator.
Right.
And for some reason or other, we evolved into lousy meat. I mean, oily, nasty, stringy, not good meat.
Right.
And that's why one of the reasons we survived so long as a species and became top of the line was, predator species who's lousy to eat. And we were the tastiest thing on the planet.
That is why
we wouldn't have survived.
That is why I love shark fishing.
Okay.
We're an apex predator, but we're a very, very young species.
Right.
Compared to sharks. We have evolved several different stages in our young life. Sharks, as old as they are, haven't changed a whole lot.
No, they're pretty much as they were. They got smaller over the years. They only grow to, big sharks nowadays are 30 feet, where they used to be 68 feet.
Yeah, the size of a school bus. But that's something that's been just the absolute point of that realm for millions and millions of years.
Right.
And they're fascinating animals. They really, really are. Each one is different. It's not like you sit there in a school of redfish, they all fight the same, they all look the same. There's no difference. It's a redfish. Same with snook. Same with snapper.
Wonderful to catch. Amazing
same
fish.
With tarpon.
But there's so many different species of sharks with so many different attitudes.
Yeah.
Different habits. Some jump, some pull deep, some pull hard, some go real quick.
Yeah.
There's so many different aspects to the fight. And one of the things that most people overgun, because as soon as they say shark, they're into 4-aught reels, 6-aught reels, big heavy rods. And we use, trout redfish tackle on them.
Sure.
For a lot of the species.
Yeah.
Because it's the only way to really get in touch with the shark, is to light tackle them. And you're still only talking about a 5 to 20 minute fight. So it's not you know, really detrimental to the fish.
Yeah.
When you get in that hour fight, that's when things start getting a little bad for the animals. And you really can't resuscitate a shark the way you can a tarpon.
No.
You can't hold them by the lip and
right.
just sit there.
It's very hard to resuscitate a shark.
Yeah, because when you grab them by the dorsal, it kind of screws up their whole nervous system. So you really got to kind of hold the tail and hold the belly. And then you've got to wiggle the tail back and forth.
If it's a big, big shark, and when I say big, I'm talking 6 foot or better.
Right.
When you hang, if you grab him by his dorsal fin, the rest of his body kind of hangs down from it. And as you're driving the boat forward, you're basically pulling a dipsy diver beside the boat.
Yep.
So he wants to naturally pull down because of that droop, and it's very, very hard to control them.
Oh, and yeah. It's next to impossible.
I would much rather use big tackle, get him to the boat quickly, even a little green.
Yeah, and on the bigger sharks, that is the appropriate tackle. 6,500 yeah. bait runners and up, 4-0s and up. But when I'm doing the little sharks and out there and using a small chunk of bait, hopefully, you know, and of course, you know, whatever Murphy's Law is going to come into effect, the biggest fish are going to hit the smallest line.
Oh, always.
Always.
That's the way it goes.
The smallest bait, the smallest line, and here's this, you know, you're catching 2-3 foot sharks and you're just having yeah. a ball, and the next thing you know, you're hooked up to an 8-footer, and you're yeah. like, oh my
and
God.
That's the way it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Now, the day before, you catch 3 or 4 or 5 little guys, and that kind of draws the big ones in.
Yeah.
Yesterday, it was, the first run was a big shark.
Really?
Bait didn't have time to even touch the bottom. I threw that rod in, hit the clicker, put it in the rod tip, walked around to the other rod, and it took off. And it ate a whole mullet and 6 foot of 250-pound leader.
Wow.
In one bite. And that's something that we weren't expecting.
No, you don't really get...
And that's why I said earlier, every day is different. And yesterday was the epitome. So I'd put out one big rod, one little rod.
Right.
And it was little 2 foot sharp nose that were chunking down mullet that were heavier than them on the big rod. And the little rod kept getting broke off every time we'd set the hook because it was a big, big shark. And it's hard to catch big sharks on little
tackle, yep.
It's hard to catch little shark on big leaders.
Yeah.
It was a good day. We got 6 shark and a cobia to the boat. We should have had 20 shark. It should have been a 20 shark day yesterday.
Yeah, and that's, even the first number is good, but the second number is, you know, that's those trip that people remember their whole life.
Yeah, definitely.
And
but the guy was Scottish.
I know who you're talking about.
You don't get more Scottish than this guy.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
He had his Scottish
really nice
son,
guy.
And his son's girlfriend or wife was just a lily white, blonde-haired Swedish girl.
Oh, God.
So we had a whole lot of different accents on the boat. I don't know what they said half the day. But he's a very, very avid fisherman, so he understands how it works.
What I love about the Scots is the first time I ever actually sat and had a conversation, I was flying to Munich, and going to work, and this Scottish guy sits next to me. He's going home after his vacation in the States, and probably one of the nicest groups of people on the planet, and you can't understand four words they say.
Have you ever met a Scottish guy that didn't have a sense of humor, wasn't nice, and didn't swear like a sailor?
Yeah, it pretty much sums it up.
Last one of them.
And the whole time I'm sitting next to this guy on a plane, it's like an 8-hour plane ride. He's talking and laughing and having a good time. And I'm sitting there going, God, I wish I understood what he's saying, but I'm just laughing and having a good time.
Like, you know? It's like they took all the happy people and put them in Scotland and then took all the grumpy people and put them in Ireland.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I think the Irish is about half and half.
Nice. I mean, really, really nice guy.
But there is something particularly unique about the Scots, and they just, there's such a riot.
Yeah,
but I can't imagine a Scot and a Swedish.
But what I liked about this guy, he was a fisherman.
Yeah,
and he was my kind of fisherman. Loves going out and catching sail cats. Loves catching sail cats because he gets it. He understands how much of a fight they are, how much fun they are to catch. It's a good tug on the end of the line.
They're great fish. I mean, yeah.
Loves going to England and fishing for carp because that's a fight.
Well, I've done a lot of carp fishing when I was in Europe, and it's a whole different experience than what you do here.
Sure.
I mean, there you've got the rod racks with the bite alarms, the monkey climbers, yep. the and you're rigging the bollies. And
that
you've
was
got
one of the things that he was saying. He had to actually make room in his luggage so he could bring his bite alarms with
oh,
him.
Oh, yeah. No, you don't fish in Europe without bite alarms. And, I mean, you know, so you've got the real set and usually a bait runner, you know, the guys who are really in a bait runner. You got a monkey climber in the middle, then you've got the bite alarms. And then when you throw it out, you drill holes through these ballies and you make these little dough ball things with all these different scents and smells and taste, and then you put water soluble line through it, and then the one in the middle has a hook, and you throw it out there and it hits the bottom and the line on the outside dissolves. So now you've got six little chum balls there, so that, you know, if the fish picks it up, he doesn't feel anything,
right?
And then grabs the one in the middle with the hook on it, and then the fight's on. But when they first are biting, if the fish comes at you, the monkey climber drops down on the pole, and the bite alarm goes beep beep real quick because it's very slow.
Yeah.
And then if the fish goes away from you, the monkey climber will rise up on the pole, so you can
Whole lot of work for carp.
Oh, well, that's nothing compared to the chairs and the tent stuff. And
we use pretzels.
I mean, it was just, oh, no, it's a whole thing. I mean,
you take the little pretzel, you hang it from the hook.
Yeah.
You get a handful of pretzels, you throw it in the water.
Yeah.
And the carp come up and start feeding on the pretzels on the top, and you just kind of drop that pretzel on the hook down there with the rest of them.
Well, I can tell you.
Simple and easy. And he was talking about all this stuff yesterday and what they do to go after these carp. I mean, it's become a religion over there.
I was actually going to say, and it's funny you said that because, you know, everybody's so crazy nowadays, but it's like a religious experience for these guys.
He said it's become almost cult-like over
it
there.
It is. And we were set up in, I was in Vienna at one show we were doing, and there was a carp fishing group's right next to us, you know, the clubs, and it was, they had carp for sale, you could eat it and everything, really tasty. I mean, great eating. I mean, I was really surprised. I'm thinking, okay, carp, and I ordered some because the guys were so nice, and we're sitting there chatting, and they're buying stuff out of our booth and all that, but I was really surprised how tasty it was. But then, after the first year in Europe selling tackle, learning and becoming involved with it and actually going out with the guys fishing for it, it is a holy experience. I mean, the only thing missing is the guy in the background going,
speaking in tongues
and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's because they do have the hats and almost the robes. I mean, it's a whole experience.
I mean, the publications, monthly publications dedicated to nothing but
carp fishing. Blinker, the oh, I forget all the different names of the magazines. I used to have subscriptions to all of them, you know, and it was just amazing. I don't know how we got on carp fishing in Europe, but I guess the Scottish guy.
Yeah.
But anyway, there is such a cool difference how each area goes about their fishing experiences.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, that's kind of how I am when I shark fish, because I know when I go, what my first step is, I'm getting the boat anchored, putting the loop on, getting the buoy on, getting the chum out, getting the chum set, then my float lines, my free lines, my sinker lines. I know every little step that I want to do, because that is the best way to fish for sharks. Patterned, everything's, you know, and then adjust your pattern as the sharks start biting.
Yeah.
But if you're going out there just kind of willy-nilly, you're not going to do as well. And I guess thinking of it that way, maybe that carp thing isn't all that crazy because, I mean,
it's no different. It's no different. I mean, you're...
Maybe because we do the shark thing and we're so religious about how we do it, how we set up. You know, I got to do this first, that second, you know. Anchor,
and
chum bag,
spend,
float, free line, sinker.
You see a definite difference between my redfish trips and my shark trips. Pull up to the dock, people get in, I leave the dock for redfish. There's nothing to really talk about. We sit there for 20 minutes at the dock on a shark trip before I leave.
And not included in the time of your charter, obviously.
Of course. And I go over what my procedures are for shark fishing. So everybody's in step with me once we get out there.
Right.
You know, not a big deal with the little sharks, but it becomes important when we've got to throw anchor and start chasing one down.
You remember Carl on the boat that day at the marker? All by himself in the boat screaming, yeah. Get the anchor, get the anchor. He was so used to having somebody with him. Going off and he's yelling, get the anchor, get the anchor.
Nobody
on the boat. That tells you we are patterned.
Yeah.
We do have a way we do stuff.
But I mean, I've got my set pattern for shark fishing, and it works.
Yeah.
And I like it. And like you said, you make your small adjustments out there as the shark hit.
Because after you've got your pattern set.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go. One last thing. Best bet. Best advice. Somebody wants to go out and have fun today.
If you want to go out and have fun, again, shark and cobia. And you're going to hear me saying this for the next 3 months because there's so many of them. The nice thing is that the harbor is coming up in temperature slowly. We're still having these cool nights that's
weird
not
as heck.
Letting... Yeah, but it's a good thing.
No, it's a great thing. We would lose all our fish.
Yeah, we don't want 90 degrees overnight. I mean,
no, we want
nothing
nice.
Good happens in the water fast.
Everything that's going on now is nice because it's all, as you said, gradual, slow.
Yep.
And the fishing is getting better. The fish are finding their places. Everything's working.
It's a great thing to go after now because everything is working to your benefit. We have lots of sharks out there. We have lots of cobia out there. Big sharks, little sharks, good cobia. You're going to find tarpon mixed in with them. You're going to start seeing Goliath grouper out there in the middle of the harbor, too. Now they're coming into their spawning period. So they're going to start moving in.
I heard about that.
Yeah, we caught one 30-pounder. It was a male, and he was pumping out sperm the whole way to the boat. So they're out there getting ready to come in, and they come in here to breed.
I'm sorry, I'm in high school again. I can't help it. It's like I'm in junior high some days. You know, we're sitting here talking. We got the whole adult thing going on. I'm obviously nowhere near a kid anymore. You say something. I'm chuckling like I'm in middle school.
You
know?
You know the rule. If you haven't grown up by 50, you don't have to.
Is that what it is? And I don't have to, I guess, because I'm way over 50.
But you got everybody out there whining about not having white bait. Well, you don't need white bait for any of those fish. Take some frozen ladyfish, fresh ladyfish, frozen mullet. Take a sabiki rig out there with you. Sabiki rig up some threadfin. You've got all the bait you need for a day. You're not out there throwing a cast net looking for it. You're not under pressure. You don't need shrimp. Go enjoy it.
I guess that's probably, I guess we can pretty much wrap it up there. Go enjoy it. Best advice. Get out on the water, anchor up, and keep in mind on these beautiful calm days like we've been having with all the sunshine, the most likely place to find a cobia is laying under your boat.
Under your boat. The ones that we've picked up have been down deep. They've been eating chunk ladyfish, catfish tails on the bottom, threadfin on the bottom. But like Frank said, watch your boat. They're going to be there.
Yeah, lean over the boat, look underneath it every once in a while.
Yep. Go back, take a look at your transom. You might see some tails sticking out from the back of the boat.
No, I'm not sure. I think I hit the wrong button. Yes, there was somebody laughing at us.
There you go.
Yes. Okay, we need a better producer here. All right. Let's see. I don't know what this one does.
Here we go.
Yes.
That makes you feel good.
A little applause from the audience there. Anyway, Radio Fishing. This is Fishing Frank here. And we have Captain Kale in the seat across from me. Kale's charter boat captain. You can hire Kale to go out on his boat, or you can hire Kale to come out with you on your boat. Learn where to go, what to do, how to do these setups, and you're not paying for his boat, so it's a lot less money.
And don't forget, next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, we have our fishing seminar.
Oh, yeah, Luigi's.
Yep.
We got Luigi's coming up, and this one's all about tarpon.
Tarpon.
If you want to learn everything we can think of to tell you, we're going
to catch them for shark bait, how to rig them for shark bait.
Yeah, we're going to try and do well, that sounds like me more than you, but... yeah, there's all kinds of stuff, and it's everything tarpon. That's coming up at Luigi's. You can call us and reserve seats for Tuesday night. I think we've got 15, 18 seats left for next Tuesday night. Wednesday night's open seating.
Yep.
So, Anyway, I'm done playing guitar. I got to record all some right. new music this week. I got to sit down with the guitars and work it out. You're going to have to tell me if I can do multiple tracks in here so I can play guitar on one, bass on the other, that type of thing.
And kind of mix it together.
And blend it, yeah.
I'm sure we can.
All right. Well, Kale's going to help me get you guys a little better music. Bobby's supposed to come in. She's got a great Fish and Frank song. I've heard it. It's great. We haven't had...
And she's a phenomenal singer. Sang at my wedding.
Yeah, you're going to love Bobby's song. She's absolutely amazing. So, anyway, Fish and Frank, Captain Kale, thanks for listening, guys. This is Radio Fishin'.